This podcast is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The content shared is not a substitute for professional medical, mental health, legal, or financial advice. Please consult a qualified professional for personalized guidance or treatment. By listening, you acknowledge that the hosts and guests are not responsible for any decisions or actions you take based on this content.
Feel like a grouch, go beyond the couch, share your confessions on the Aurora Sessions.
Hello, Aurora Healing Crew. Welcome to the Aurora Sessions Beyond the Couch, where we take the stressors that come up in session and bring them into conversation beyond the couch. This is the space where real talk meets real life. Hi, everyone. This is Teresa, the founder of Aurora Sun Counseling, a group private practice providing psychotherapy for clients in New Jersey, Virginia, and Pennsylvania. Today, I'm here with my good friend, Maria Ramos. Okay, so let me just clear that up. I have been saying Maria's name wrong for the last 10 years, and it is Ramos, not Ramos. I am sorry.
It's okay. I just thought it was so funny when I heard it on the recording. And I'm like, I never taught her how to say it.
So in my head, I've always said Ramos. So now it is Ramos. It's always been Ramos. She's a self-proclaimed dance mom on steroids and a meeting event professional by day, a mom to a 15-year-old Jackie, and wife to a triathlete all the rest of the time. Maria met me through a neighborhood Facebook group and kind of convinced me, I'm going to use convince, to become part of the home and school organization. And we help plan stuff for our school district together. And a servant leader, Maria, spent all of her daughter's elementary school years on the board of home and school, otherwise widely known as PTO, and is a fixture at the dance studio where our daughters both train. Growing up dancing herself, as well as a professional planner, Maria enjoys helping to organize the dressing room for all production shows, recital, and backstage. This is how I got connected with Maria. It was through Facebook. We lived in the same neighborhood where our Facebook groups were connected, the neighborhood. And because Maria is a planner, she planned an Easter egg hunt. And from there...
Oh my gosh.
Do you remember the Easter egg
hunt? I do remember the Easter egg hunt.
Yes.
Yep.
So I think my daughter was maybe two or three. My son was like barely walking. I
remember this.
Yes.
It's all coming back to
yes.
me. Yeah.
I made Michael take everybody to do this Easter egg hunt. And I remember Maria clear as day saying, 1, 2, 3, look at me, to get everybody's attention. So from there, we just Facebook chatted, but I also noticed Maria is Asian, obviously. She's Filipino, and being in South Jersey where there's not a lot of Asians, I just saw her as somebody that I could ask questions, like, where do you eat? Where do you buy food? Because there's some times where I miss eating Asian foods. And then she told me about where she buys whole fish and where to get it. I said, I am not that Asian.
Oh, come on. But that's closed, by the way, for the next 6 months. Do you
yes,
know that?
Okay. I did. I think I sent you, I don't know who sent it first, but that H Mart near us is getting renovated.
Yes.
And I'm so excited.
It's going to be so exciting.
Because they're going to have a food court upstairs, like all the H Marts all over.
Yes.
So we're going to be up to...
We're finally coming to the 21st century.
Correct. Yes. The other thing I don't, and I'll get into Maria later, but I don't think she knows. So she was president for homeschool how many years?
Oh, gosh. Basically, second to sixth grade. So 4 or 5 years.
And then asked me if I would want to be president. I said, no, I really don't. And I asked if, like, how much commitment it was. And she was right. It was not a lot of physical commitment, but it's still a lot of questions and things people wanted.
Yes.
But I never saw myself as, like, a leadership role. So after I became president, then I think it planted a seed that maybe I can start my own practice. And I never told Maria that I'm pretty sure that's what empowered me to open my own private practice.
Because of doing home and school.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So
I believe it.
Then after I told Maria one time after we dropped off the kids, we were eating fruit bowls or acai bowls outside a coffee shop. And I was telling her how I was going to pay somebody to do the LLC for me. Mm-hmm. And she says, Teresa, you could do it for free in 2 seconds. So I was like, what? Do you remember this?
I do.
Yeah.
I was like, you don't have to pay somebody to do all of this paperwork.
Correct. And so, but this is just a little bit of all the tips that Maria has given me through the years. When I was a stay-at-home mom working very part-time, I didn't know how I was going to go back full-time and bridge the gap between after school is over and when summer camp starts, because usually there's a gap after school and a gap before school starts. And as a mom who has been home, that was very anxiety provoking. And she gave me all the tips, just like dance. And whenever I have weird niche questions, Maria had the answers. So I appreciate that.
Of course. Well, I'm glad it was, you know, it's funny. We kind of gravitate to each other as Asian Americans, mm-hmm. right? And right, in South Jersey, there's not a whole large population like there is in other areas, California, North Jersey, wherever it may be. So yeah, I have the same, you know, kind of energy coming to you. So I agree with that. But also, you know, just learning from you as well. I mean, you have really blossomed your business in the last few years. And I am just in awe of all that you've done and really proud of what you've established here and what you've grown it into be. I mean, come on, you're doing a podcast now. And that is really cool. And you can talk to some of the other dance moms who know this, but like I've been dying to start a podcast for years.
Oh, really?
Mom things.
We need to do this.
Yes,
then.
Yes.
I will rent out my studio. <I'm kidding.
laughs> it would be so much fun. But yes. Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, just the list of things. And you have just been that go-getter to just go, okay, I'm going to figure out how to do this. And that's what you've done. So kudos to you.
Thank you. It has cost my husband extra visits to the doctors. I'm kidding. Because he is more conservative and I'm more impulsive. So whenever I say something, now he has learned that it might be true. So he better make sure all the safety nets are in place.
Well, that might be an Asian thing because once we put our mind to it, we are determined to get it done. Mm. And Ron says that about me. He's like, yeah, once you have it set in your mind, he's like, even buying a car. You said, oh, one day, you know, you're going to go car shopping. And literally every day after that, until I bought a car, I was obsessed with looking at everything about the cars.
This is so funny because right now our son is obsessed with e-bikes, with I forget what else he had us, oh, boogie boards. Mm-hmm. And until it bought.
Yes. He's obsessive.
He's
over
going
it.
To keep telling us about the facts about it. Yes.
Too funny.
Okay. So what I wanted to start with is can you tell me how your parents immigrated here and what got them here?
So they met while they were in the Philippines. Okay. And my dad was in medical school. And my mom was also in the healthcare academia profession. You know, she was going to school to become a medical technician. Hmm. Right. So they met through my dad's sister. When they met, my dad was getting ready to come here to the States for his residency, and he was assigned to Newburgh Hospital up in New York. And so you know, for them, it was like, okay, you know, well, see you when I see you. Or I don't know exactly how it went down. Mm-hmm. But he left, came to the States, and probably 6 months later, from what I understand, my mom ended up in Jacksonville, Florida, to continue her schooling.
Oh, wow.
And when she was done, she moved up to Newburgh, New York. Mm-hmm. So it might be that thing that, you know, once you have your mind set on something, mm-hmm. you figure out how to do it. So she figured out how to get to the Philippines, to the United States, to follow my dad.
That's great.
And they honestly has just built their life here ever since. From Newburgh, they moved to Camden. My dad was working at West Jersey Hospital, which is now Virtua.
Oh, wow.
That's when my sister was born. I came 10 years later. So there's a 10-year age gap between us. And I grew up in Marlton, not too far away from here.
So, and I don't know for sure, but in the Philippines, do they also teach English as part of the language?
Do. Well, okay. Yes, actually, in the Philippines, the national language is English.
Oh, okay.
And so, because there's a lot of dialects of the Philippine language, right. Which is Tagalog, and, you know, some of the dialects don't even understand each other.
Mm-hmm.
So English is kind of that bridge.
Mm-hmm.
There are some schools, I believe, that are just English speaking, but I believe all schools train in English.
That's interesting. So very much like China and all the different Chinese dialects that, in, if you're walking around in the Philippines, people will speak English before maybe their own dialect, just in case they don't understand their own, like, dialects, each other's dialects.
We call it Taglish.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, a mixture of Tagalog and English.
And what, do you speak any?
I do not.
Oh, okay.
So growing up here, you know, they wanted to have Americanized children. My sister and I never learned to speak Tagalog.
Mm-hmm.
They would speak it in the house to each other. They would talk about us. We, just from being around it so much, mm-hmm. we can both understand. I walk into a store and somebody's speaking Tagalog, I can understand them 100%. I know exactly what they're talking about. I cannot speak it myself.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I walk in to an Asian store, they'll start talking to me in Tagalog and I'm like, oh, I don't speak, I speak English. And in today's day and age, like, people are caught back, but that was very common
mm-hmm.
for Filipinos in the United States coming here. It's like all the children just spoke English.
Is that something your parents wanted, or did they put you, because a lot of times for the Asian like for the Chinese, I know we're all the same, but Asian, we're not the same, which is the point of this conversation. But in the Chinese culture, there's Chinese school on Saturdays that a lot of Chinese kids go to learn how to speak and write. Is that something that is...
there,
in the Filipinos?
That I know of, there are no formal schools here that teach, teach Tagalog or anything like that. I know there's like summer camps and stuff that folks try to do, but I guess we are just so stoic and hard-headed that the Filipino kids were like, no, we don't need to learn.
Okay. And your parents were okay with that?
Yeah. I mean, they never really pushed us to understand. A few times they would... our grandparents, our aunts and uncles would, when they would come over from the Philippines, they would try to teach us how to count. And, you know, I could probably get up to 5 in Tagalog or, you know, just the silly phrases and everything. My husband, he's also Filipino, but his parents were of 2 different provinces and spoke 2 different dialects. So there is a case where their common language was English.
Yeah. So that's why I was asking about the English language in the Philippines, because people from other countries who were maybe, I'm just thinking about my grandfather, he was a doctor in Taiwan, but because of the language barrier,
he couldn't practice here.
Correct. Yeah, okay. He would have to start as an intern, and the English language was really difficult.
No, so it was kind of fluid for my dad, because he came here. He finished his schooling at the University of Santo Tomas in the Philippines. And right from there, he got his residency here in the States.
That's great. So growing up, can you kind of summarize what it was like growing up in Marlton with your dad working in the ER? And was mom also working, or can you tell us about your childhood?
Yeah. So from what I remember, my mom was very much the, she was a stay-at-home mom at first, but she was she didn't work that whole time. When we had relatives come, she would stop working, and you know, for like 3 months at a time and everything. She was the jack of all trades. She is the jack of all trades. Real estate agent. She owned a flower shop for many years. She was a bank teller and basically just like cycled through those three careers all her life and retired as a bank teller. But did go, you know, back to the hospital and practice med tech when I was in college and everything. So literally she cycled through all those careers. But growing up, my dad was an emergency room doctor all the time. If I got hurt, I did not go to see a doctor. I don't think I've had ever seen a doctor until like I was 18.
Oh, wow.
Truly. Like he was my doctor. Maybe the dentist.
Right.
Of all things aside, there was no such thing as well visits. Like did not go every year.
Or blood work?
My mom was a med tech. My mom took my blood at home and took it to the hospital to process. Yeah. I mean, she took it in the middle of the night. She's a vampire, right? Yeah. So, and that is a true story. Like, I remember waking up to her taking my blood because we needed some kind of blood test for some kind of paperwork, and she would take it to the hospital and process it. I know how, like,
I know. I know. Growing up in the 80s, people thought drinking out of water hoses
was dangerous. Normal. Yeah. Well, it was not dangerous. Yeah. It was completely normal, right? Yes. I always remember seeing my dad in a white coat. We didn't really have family dinners together, right? I grew up in a flower shop for the first part of my life because my mom, owned the flower shop, ran it holidays, Mother's Day, Valentine's Day, Christmas, always there. We actually had an apartment above the flower shop, even though it was a few miles from our house. But that was basically for me, I'd like to say. I would watch TV up there. She would care for me. It was actually my uncle's apartment when he came from the Philippines. That's where he would stay. He actually owned the building, I think, of where the flower shop was. So, I would say I didn't have like the typical normal mom and dad come home every night and have dinner on the table. Burger King was my dinner, right. But not to say my mom didn't feed me because my mom was a gourmet cook.
Oh, wow.
Whereas a gourmet cook. And I remember her and my teachers laughing because I had an assignment of like, what did you eat for dinner? And I had to describe my dinner. On paper, and it was like fourth grade or something. And I said, I had sauteed scallops with pasta on the side, and it was like a gourmet meal. Mm-hmm. And everybody's like hamburgers, pizza, whatever. And they just would always laugh. But yeah, that was my mom. Like she would see something and she can create it.
That's like, very interesting because immediately. Maria does not cook.
I don't cook at all. And I think that was because I was just like given food all the time. Yeah. Right. And luckily I married well and he can cook and cooks great.
Yes.
So, yeah.
So growing up, do you remember, because part of the title of this episode is called Tiger Moms, and Tiger Parents were coined Tiger Parents because of the expectation, the maybe using harsher language with children instead of telling them what they did right or well. Tiger parents tend to tell them what they still need to do. Would you call your parents tiger parents?
Absolutely not.
Oh.
Only to the point where it was expected I go to medical school. Like they just assumed, whatever, she'll get through school. They put me in private school. And my sister went to private school as well. And I don't think they really realized that just putting me in private school was going to get me into medical school. Mm-hmm. I don't know exactly what they were thinking. That, you know, I danced all growing up. Mm-hmm. I danced from third grade on. So mm-hmm. I was always at the studio. I saw myself either performing arts or, you mm-hmm. know, because my mom had a flower shop and some kind of the wedding business, which mm-hmm. is eventually what I wanted to become. I mm-hmm. wanted to become a wedding planner. Mm-hmm. And I kind of did that for a couple years mm-hmm. until I realized this is not for me. and I wrote that story out in the book I wrote a few years ago. But anyways, growing up, I wasn't the best student, but I think because I was in private school, they were a little more lackadaisical. Mm-hmm. I don't think my dad ever met any of my teachers.
Oh, okay.
He never went to a parent-teacher conference. Maybe went to my school a couple times for a chorus concert or something. I know he was there at graduation, and the one time he went to a dance recital was my graduation night because we went from graduation to recital so I could dance my solo.
Oh, wow.
And that was the first and only time he went to a dance recital.
So because I have, because I'm Asian and I'm a therapist, a lot of Asian people reach out to find me as their therapist.
Yes.
And one of the things that they do mention is how busy their parents were working.
Yes.
And weren't able to show up at school things.
Yes.
And that kind of impacted them. How did that impact you at all? Or were you kind of like, this is just the way life is?
Growing up, that was normal to me. I don't think it impacted me in the way that I was longing for his attention. Mm-hmm. If I was, I would get hurt. Mm-hmm. Right. And I knew that, like, if I got hurt, I would end up in the hospital to go see him, even for just him to send me home.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
Maybe that was it if I look back, but I never intentionally wanted him to be home or to be things, because I thought that was just normal. He's working.
Right.
He's working to provide so I can do the things that I do, that mm-hmm. I can go to private school, that I can dance, mm-hmm. that I can have my car.
Mm-hmm. All that. And did your mom go to these events?
All the time. She was the one that was always there. That's why, like, she was the one that was always at every dance recital. Practically, she ended up working at the dance studio at some point.
Right.
Right. Just like sitting at the desk so she could be there. That's why she sold the flower shop, because she felt like she was missing out. So she did part-time jobs and then did real estate so she could have a little more flexibility to probably take me to dance competitions or performances mm-hmm. or and stuff like that.
What a great role model to have, because she was a hustler, like still trying to make money, not sure if she needed to financially with your dad as an ER doc, but still trying to work and be there with you.
Yeah.
Even at that age, that is something. No wonder you are the way you are too.
it's funny, you look back and it's a little creepy and a little scary, but at the same time, yes. And the tiger mom thing wasn't a thing for me back then, which is really ironic.
It is. So did you have any anxiety or anything looking back? Like, did you have any things that you thought you needed a therapist for back then?
No.
So you were well adjusted.
I was a strong headed kid that I'm fine. I know when I want. If I was crying, it's like, we don't cry over that. Okay.
Okay. So one of the reasons I wanted you on the podcast is because a lot of friends, peers our age, including you, mm-hmm. are now caregiving for their aging parents.
Yeah.
Can you tell me a little bit about what is going on right now with your parents and when that started and that journey?
So you'll notice that I say with my mom, you know, my mom was, and I quickly correct myself or say is. Mom has dementia, vascular dementia. She was diagnosed in 2019. And it's been a journey. They were still living close by here when we discovered the symptoms, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we think, like, all along there's been signs of dementia, but really, you know, there were some events that happened in 19, and then right before COVID happened, I moved them into assisted living just so she could kind of have a little more care, be watched. And because it was evident that my dad couldn't care for her, mm-hmm. just slightly, it really became evident just, I guess, a year and a half ago that he really couldn't care for her. When she fell in the bathtub and they have this thing of don't tell anybody, mm-hmm. we'll figure it out, it'll be fine. And then that's when we realized it's like, okay, this has been happening. She passes out a lot and would fall and stuff and had a lot of major falls.
So can you tell us what is vascular dementia?
Yeah. So vascular dementia is when the synapses don't happen in your brain, right? I don't know exactly what all the technical stuff is it's about, but it's different from Alzheimer's, where vascular dementia is all about the arteries and the synapses and everything and things not connecting. And so a lot of it is like when she blacks out, that means something's not happening and connecting. Okay. And so she's falling and then she hits her head. And so she's at the point where over the years, they're now, my dad is, they're in a complex where my dad is living in independent living and they did live there together. But then she had repeated falls. We had to move her into memory care where she would have 24-hour care.
Yes.
And be looked after. And she's been, it's hard to say she's been thriving there, but she hasn't been to the hospital in a year and a half. She, you know, she's cared for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. They get her up every day. They kind of move her. She's technically in hospice, but that just means she gets elevated care and more care. She could be there for 3 more years. But it's to the point where, you know, visits are hard.
Mm-hmm.
She thinks I'm her sister.
Mm.
And always the quirky things about it, it's like when it comes, she's so excited to see me because in her mind, she thought I just died like days ago.
Her sister? Because she thinks you're her sister?
Yeah.
And has her sister passed?
Yes.
Okay.
Her sister passed before I was born.
Okay.
And I was named after her.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's some kind of correlation there.
Yeah.
She does talk about her dad who passed in the 80s and said, oh, you know, dad was still here. He was here. And I'm like, your dad or my dad? Because I'm thinking she's talking about, you know, my dad. And I don't know if, and this is all Asian cultures or in all families, but she called my dad, dad, right? And I'm like, your dad or my dad? She's like, aren't they one and the same? And so, and so that's hard to hear. Like she, because I said, she always made every dance competition of mine. She always made every recital of mine. What's really hard right now is that she can't see Jackie really thriving in what she does. You know, so it's hard. It's like, I rack my brain is like, how can I get her to the theater this weekend to see her in Chicago? Because I know she would just love to see that. And it's just, it's too hard logistically, physically. And honestly, she probably wouldn't understand what's going on.
Yeah.
So that's what the part that hurts is like, she's here with us.
Mm-hmm.
But she really isn't. It's not my mom.
Yeah. So this is just how my brain works. I know you're crying, but did you call Ron dad?
God, no. Thanks for breaking the ice.
Okay, I didn't know.
God, no.
Okay.
No.
I was like, what? No, I don't think that's, I think that's just a Filipino thing.
Okay.
I don't think that's all people. That's really funny. Okay. So, okay. I remember in the beginning of your mom's diagnosis, because I must have been the only social worker therapist you knew, I don't know, but you would ask me random questions. And I remember, like, because on the outside, people see you as having it together. People see you as strong, and you are strong. People see you as, dare I say, bossy, because you know what you want and you say it and you don't give a F, which is one of, like, I need some of that.
Yeah.
And people
here I'm, like, breaking down crying.
No, it's okay. No, I love, sorry, I'm sadistic, but I love it. And I remember our conversations and how you were so upset because mom was lost again. Mom ran out again and you were driving around looking for her, trying to convince her to go home. I remember you said, like, she's packing her bags. I don't know where she's going to go, but she's out there with a suitcase or something.
Yeah.
And
she was on Friendship Road pulling her suitcase when I drove up.
Yes. And that's the part that whenever I see the post, like, be kind because you don't know what someone else is going through. Like, you're one of the people that I think about because people only see one side of you, but you had to be that way. And really, you have great boundaries. You, like, in order for you to be there for your family, in order for you to be there for your mom's visits, as difficult as it is, you have to be hard and separate what doesn't really matter, which is people's opinions of you.
Yeah.
So even this morning, you were saying, whatever you say to somebody else about somebody, you will say it to their face. And I've seen you do it. And I just want to hide. But that's, people know where they stand.
Yeah.
And that is a great quality of yours. So, yeah, I think about that because I remember your mom at the dance studio.
Yeah.
And I remember your mom in the audience, your mom and dad's seats were reserved at the Scottish Rite. Like, we knew that that's where your parents were going to go. Yeah. So, I guess what gets you through these hard times now? What are you doing for yourself? Are you talking about your feelings?
In the beginning, I was. Now it's just keeping myself busy. Because if I break down, I'm going to crash. Hmm. It is my mentality, right? So it's not about, you know, talking about my feelings because I can talk them over and over and over. And I had a great therapist that I did talk it through. And she's like, this is normal. And I just needed her to tell me that. It's like, this is normal. Feeling these things are normal. It's okay to feel these things. And sometimes I go back, it's like, should I be talking these out? I was like, no, I can get myself out of that rut. Right. Mm-hmm. And you know, unfortunately it's just about, like, keep life going, just to not shut it out and avoid it. It's like, I still have to do it. It's like, oh yeah, today is the second. I need to make sure that, you know, the payments for all of my parents' things are in line. Right. That's, what's going in my head this morning as I'm getting ready. I was like, oh, log on, make sure all the bank accounts are, you know, kosher and everything. Because that doesn't stop, right? Mm-hmm. Life keeps on going. Everybody's going to be asking for money. We still, like, Jackie has a show this weekend. Mm-hmm. It's like, you just keep the ball rolling.
Mm-hmm. So what would you say to other adult children who are going through very similar things with aging parents?
Yeah.
A lot, I don't know if we're just catching it, but a lot of our friends have parents with dementia
Yeah.
and being diagnosed and a lot of similar stories. And a lot of times I say, have you talked to Maria? Because she's very open to talking about it. And what would you say are things you wish more people knew about? Or I guess, how can people help other peers who are going through the same thing?
Truly, honestly, it all depends on where they are with it. But just understand if they're early in the diagnosis, talk to your parents. Have those hard conversations. Understand what they want. Understand what they've prepped for. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I had the very hard lesson of understanding what dementia is, understanding what elder care is, understanding what's out there for seniors as far as, you know, facilities and living. It's like, what is assisted living? How is that different mm-hmm. from a nursing home? What is independent care, right? So just know about it. There's many times where I say, you know, I should just have like a group of people come together. And I did. For a while there was a group of us ladies that had parents that were all going through the same thing. Unfortunately, you know, all their parents have passed since. So it's kind of like, you know, finding your way and saying, oh yeah, it's like still going through it, right? And a lot of times I feel guilty because they don't have their parents anymore, mm-hmm. and I still do, and I mm-hmm. feel like I should be not stronger, but just like, it's like I'm still trudging through, like, mm-hmm. you know, mom's still with us, but it's...
Do you feel guilty that she's still with you? And with
oh,
them?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
At the same time, it's also means that you're going through it. You're yeah. still having to take care, and you're yeah. not just... And the thing with dementia and Alzheimer's is you're grieving the person they used to be.
Yeah.
And you're grieving the future of them not being able to go to events for your daughter, yeah. Events in the future. And meanwhile, you have to take care of them.
Yeah.
Were there any support groups that you knew of available for caregivers?
It was tough because it was during COVID. So a lot of that stuff did go online, but it was weird, right? It was very odd. I turned to Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
You know, good or bad, people have their opinions on it. There was a whole, you know, children of parents with mm-hmm. dementia community.
Yes.
And that helped a lot.
Yeah.
You know, going through there. I had to hide it for a bit just because it got too much.
Mm-hmm.
Around here, no, I didn't really seek that out because mm-hmm. I've always had friends who are kind of like going through the same mm-hmm. thing, and we would, you know, we would text and, mm-hmm. you know, honestly, it was more like, oh, guess what mom did this time, or, mm-hmm. you know, guess what's happening over at, you know, the home today and stuff, but, you know, they're living their best life. Like, dad does karaoke every Thursday. And that's, you know, that's awesome for him.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it's hard to find people that are going through the same thing.
So do you like are you happy with the care that they're getting right now?
Yes.
Do you mind saying their name? Because I think it's hard for people to find
sure. yeah, no.
good care.
Here in South Jersey, they're at Woodbury Mused. Here in Woodbury, there's a couple reasons why I love it. One, it's only 10 minutes away,
mm-hmm.
right? And that was very helpful, especially with my dad. My dad had this thing for a while where he would take his blood pressure every hour.
Mm.
And then at 9 o'clock at night, he thought it was too high. So he would want me to take him to the ER.
Oh my goodness. So you did?
So I would.
Oh my gosh.
I did that for several years.
Oh my gosh.
But that when they were living in Mount Laurel or they were living in Cherry Hill
yeah.
or even right here, and it was exhausting.
Mm-hmm.
It's
exhausting even 10 minutes away.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, so one, now they're close and they have a memory care, which is in one building. And my dad is in the independent care. He gets three mm-hmm. meals a day. they don't go into the apartment to do the checks, mm-hmm. like the wellness checks at midnight, like other assisted living places do. But when he comes out of his apartment in the morning, they have this wood block. So it's security goes around every night and puts it up.
Okay.
So that when they open the door, it swings down.
Okay.
And that's their way of knowing that that person's been up and out of their apartment.
Okay.
It's kind of like, okay, they're up and out of bed. They have to come down for breakfast.
Right.
So, and I guess breakfast is another way to check.
Okay.
But yeah, so yeah, Woodbury Muse, the nurses are wonderful. The aides are wonderful there. And honestly, I did send them there cause it was one of the most more reasonably priced.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the fancy place, right? It's not the 5-star hotel mm-hmm. lobby that those some are that they've lived at before and they were great. There's mm-hmm. nothing against them, but they were draining their bank accounts living there.
So that's good to know because money is a big barrier, a big issue with aging parents and you want to care for them, but also like you need to have the finances to do so.
Yes.
And you found a place that was reasonable and gives wonderful care.
Yes.
That's great. So going back to Tiger Moms, so your parents weren't Tiger parents per se.
No.
The only part I would say about Tiger parents is that talking about feelings, that's something, a common denominator.
Yes.
And that's probably an Asian thing as well. We just don't talk about feelings. So that's why it's very odd that there's an Asian therapist. And so how much do you think you and your husband are quote unquote, what would you say is the definition of Tiger parents and how much does it apply to you guys?
So I think Ron and I have different definitions of it. Mm-hmm. To him, it's assimilating it to helicopter parenting, right? Whereas, you know, there's high expectations, knowing what your child's doing, and, you know, setting those expectations. And when they meet it, it's like, okay, great. Now here's your next one, right? Mm-hmm. Here's your next expectation.
Mm-hmm.
And the celebration is very quick and short. It's like, yeah, we'll celebrate you, but that was expected.
Mm-hmm. Oh, poor Jackie. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So I guess, what are the expectations of, what do you, and without putting this on her, but what do you want for her, I should say?
Want her to be happy.
Mm-hmm.
Want her to be happy with success.
Mm-hmm.
And want her to be able to do something she loves.
Mm-hmm.
And support herself
mm-hmm.
and be, you know, that's really it. Of course, you know, and everybody's like, well, you want her to get good grades. So it's like, well, yeah, I think that's a given. I think like all parents want mm-hmm. their kids to get good grades. I say that with like a question mark at the end. You know, it's, and a couple case scenarios, you know, it's just kind of funny. You know, she'll come home. She's like, oh, mom, I got a 92 on my test. I'm like, that's great. Why not 100?
Mm-hmm.
And everybody's like, man, you're such a tiger mom. I was like, well, you know, why didn't you make up those
eight points
yes. or whatever? Or, you know, it should be like, hey, mom, I'm eighth in my class. I'm like, awesome. Why not first? You know?
Yeah.
And for us, it's for Ron and I, we really do need to be careful of this, but mm-hmm. because he says it too, we're like, it's a joke to us,
mm-hmm.
right? Because we're Asian
mm-hmm.
and everybody looks at us like they might be tiger. They're probably tiger parents. Mm-hmm. Right. And we're just kind of feeding into it, but mm-hmm. no, we just want her to be happy and successful. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay. She tells us right now she wants to be a paramedic.
Mm-hmm.
That is great.
Mm-hmm.
But the tiger parents are us. And mm-hmm. it's like, no, you don't want to be a paramedic. You want to be a doctor.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. If not anything because of having enough money, which we've discussed before.
Yes.
In the Asian culture, money equals success.
That is right.
Not because we're greedy. Not because we want to be rich and famous
or whatever.
Right. It's because money is security.
Yes. It is all about security.
Yeah. So in growing up, you said that talking about feelings was not something that was normal in your household.
Yeah.
How about now for the next generation with Jackie? What has changed? What's the same?
Oh, I really try to get her to talk and she won't. She won't talk to me. I'm like, how is your day? Great. What happens? Not much, right? Typical teenager kind of stuff. I don't have that very open teacher that open teenager who gets in the car mm-hmm. and tells me everything, mm-hmm. which I know a lot of you guys do, and I'm a little jealous of you.
No, it's not. I tell you when it happens. It does not happen all the time. Yeah.
But, you can see it in their face and you're mm-hmm. just like, what is going on? I need you to talk to me. Because in today's society, we hear about all those kids hiding their feelings and, mm-hmm. Wanting to hurt themselves and mm-hmm. everything. And it's just like, you don't want that for your child. Mm-hmm. So when I look at her and I see there's worry in her face, it's like, what's wrong? Talk to me. Mm-hmm. But she is very open with it. We do have a great school district mm-hmm. where they are very accommodating to those kids who, they noticed everything before I did mm-hmm. And said, hey, maybe it would be helpful for her to talk with so-and-so. Mm-hmm. And we did that and she loved that, right? Mm-hmm. And she was like, yes, this is what I needed. Mm-hmm. It's not about not opening up to mom and dad. Mm-hmm. It's opening up to somebody who doesn't have those expectations of you.
Right. And also, what is different about this generation, what you and Ron are doing, is mm-hmm. giving her the space, the availability that, okay, it doesn't have to be me, but if you're going through something, there's other people that you could talk to.
Yeah, the village.
Right, which I think—
And professionals.
That not just in the Asian culture, in our last generation, talking about going to a therapist was
taboo.
Yes. There's still a stigma, but I think it's getting better.
I think
even a lot of therapists, a lot of title holders are talking about having a therapist.
Yes.
So I think those are great things that you and Ron are doing.
Oh, yeah. Just making sure that she's heard, that she knows that she's heard and not alone. Oh, yes. So how can we erase the stigma of needing help with mental health is taboo, specifically in our community, Asian American community?
So it's funny because it wasn't until I became a therapist that I realized that that there weren't a lot of Asian therapists. But also, as I'm building my network, there's so many other Asian therapists that are trying to build groups, databases for clients to look for Asian therapists.
Yeah.
So I think the more that Asian people also talk about mental illness, and not just like mental illness, schizophrenia, but like anxiety, depression, pressures.
Right.
We're close to Rowan University. There's, med school. So like there's a lot of people, the pressures of college, even not just med school, people coming to therapy. And I think the more people talk about it and have people in public talk about it, I think the more, and as we have generation, as we grow and progress in generations, like you and Ron, giving Jackie space to see other people and talking to their cousins about it or other dancers talking about it.
Yeah.
I think that breaks the stigma.
Yeah, absolutely. And even, I'd like to share what you've done with other things that she's involved with the pageant world.
Mm-hmm.
Just making it okay.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So you being the sponsor in the system that she currently holds the title in.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is awesome. And that's one thing. And I know you're going to have Todd on soon. Mm-hmm. But Todd is very good at making sure the girls feel comfortable and mm-hmm. have that space.
Yes.
And make it not a stigma.
Yes.
That, you know, that one, mental health and wellness is a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And two, just because I need a therapist doesn't mean pageantry is bad.
Yes.
Right? And because that also has its mm-hmm. own stigma.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right?
I mean, yes, even personally, it took me this long to to buy into the pageant stuff.
Yeah.
Because even though I watched pageants as a little kid growing up with my grandmother and trying to guess who's going to win, I loved it watching yeah. as a girl. But then as we get older, we think, oh gosh, it's a beauty contest. But then having access to seeing other people go through the pageant cycle and the things you have to learn and the skills yeah. that you have to develop, it's a wonder anybody could get through it without therapy.
Yeah.
But also I think it's great that people like Todd are normalizing mental health because there is so much pressure. And it's not like bad pressure. It's pressure that they are learning how to face, that they will have to face in the real world, like yes. interviewing, talking to, making friends, new people, yeah. all of that. And So when I see an organization without a mental health sponsor, I do try to see how we can help and kind of be a sponsor, even just by like putting Aurora Sun Counseling on the
yeah.
like sponsorship
yeah.
to normalize it. Yeah.
I think that's awesome. I think every, you know, community, especially in the performing arts, I mean, you look at these actors,
mm-hmm.
You know, and auditioning,
mm-hmm.
you know, what I watched Jackie go through and she is the one that has been leading the charge and going to audition
mm-hmm.
For things. And, you know, I watch her to be like, okay, she's good. She's, you know, she's the one leading this charge
mm-hmm.
and she's in a good headspace. Right. Mm-hmm. And it also helps that, you know, she knows she has resources to lean on and go to if she needs them.
And this industry, the performing arts, is tough.
Yeah.
Because what's different about performing arts versus a regular 9-to-5, maybe you'll go on 5 interviews, maybe you'll get 2 out of 5 yeses, mm-hmm. or at least 1 yes. Eventually you're going to get a yes and get right. a job that you could like maybe retire if you don't mess up or get laid off.
Right.
But with the industry, it's
a short cycle.
Yes. And you have to keep putting yourself out there.
Yep.
You're going to get more no's than yeses.
Yeah.
And I don't even know why people would want to go into this industry because you're going to get no's much more than yeses. Mm-hmm. And
but you know, I watch a lot of TikTok.
Yes, same.
And I've gotten to the TikTok feed of I shouldn't call them starving artists because they're not.
Mm-hmm.
But there are these actors that mm-hmm. are auditioning and everything. And one of them that I think we talked about earlier, mm-hmm. Elise is on there and she coincidentally raised at the same studio that our girls go to.
Which I was excited to hear because I yes. follow her too. And I'm pretty sure she came up on my For You because of you.
Probably, probably. But in a recent TikTok, she said that, you know, why do I keep on auditioning if I keep on getting no's? And she said something to the fact that I just enjoy learning at these auditions. You get to learn from new choreographers, new directors, and meet new people. And that is what the experience is all about. It's not mm-hmm. just about auditioning to get into a show.
Mm-hmm.
It's about learning new things and seeing new places and learning new, you know, new skills. Each time you go to an audition.
Okay. Is there, before I get to the fun questions, is there anything you wanted to add or any questions you had?
I keep on thinking about like, what should I ask Teresa about? And, you know, we talked about, you know, the stigma of you know, growing up Asian and everything is what, am I doing this right? Right. it's always, am I doing this right? Like, is it okay that my daughter is going on all these auditions and stuff, even though like, and the way I kind of justify it in my head is like, well, she's a good student. She does great in school. Right. She needs something else to challenge her.
Oh my gosh. I should not be the grantor of, yes, you are doing right. You are doing this right and you're not doing this right. No, I think that it comes down, because I look at you and I have the same questions. Am I training my children right? So I would say what you said about you just want Jackie to be happy.
Yeah.
And be able to sustain herself and be independent and have a safe space to talk. So what you said about you don't think that she opens up to you, I think as long as she knows she can when she needs to,
yeah,
is all she needs right now, or that you're giving her the tools to go to other people if right. she needs to, and friends, a safe place.
Right.
So the other thing that you said is it's Jackie led. So she's at this age. And I'm so sorry, Jackie, that we're talking about you and you're not here, but maybe you could come on too and defend yourself. But she's 15.
Yeah.
She's definitely has her own mind, and letting her guide and then still being there as mom and dad to let her know she could fall. She could... Yeah. That you're joking when she's not number one
yes.
and number eight, that ultimately you just want her to be happy.
Yeah.
I think as long as you reinforce that, that's all we could do as parents.
Yeah.
Also, one question that came up today was like, what do you think your expectations of Jackie as you and Ron age? Because in the Asian culture, it is like we don't put our elderly in facilities, right?
Right.
Like
there's a lot of stress there that we didn't even touch on.
Yeah.
Of, you know, the stigma that I put my parents in a facility
right.
and are not living with me.
Right.
I even hear it from family close to me.
Yeah.
It's hard.
Yes, it is.
Extremely
because it's
hard.
Like, the worst thing, like as far as disrespect, they took care of you. You're lucky yes. you were born. You're lucky you're here in the United States. And
as I told Jackie often, you know, I brought you into this world. I can take mm-hmm. you out. It's one of our ongoing little jokes. But yeah, you're right. Like it is, I am doing the worst thing. And that's where I lean on my village. Mm-hmm. It's like somebody again asked me why they're not living with me. And over and over again, you know, of course, my husband's be like, they can't physically live with us. We don't mm-hmm. have 24-hour care. It would be more expensive for us mm-hmm. to bring in that care. We would have to, you know, add on to our house, or we would have to move. And that is not something that we are able to do right now.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that is a big stressor and something that weighs on me every time something is brought up.
Mm-hmm.
But like you said, you know, I depend on opening up to folks who would like really bring me down to reality and just say, no, you're doing the right thing. And I know that because that's what they wanted. That's why like my mom has long-term care insurance.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that that's what
thank it's goodness
used for.
Thank goodness. We all need long-term care insurance. But also, so Jackie, what do you want to say to future Jackie when you and Ron?
I don't want her to have, you know, Ron always says, I don't want to put her through this of what, like, I'm going through now.
Mm-hmm.
Even though, you know, I get it. I understand it. Yes, it's very hard. But at the same time, it's just like, you will have a good head on your shoulders. You know what's going to be best for you and us.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm empowering you to make that decision.
I love that. And I think that that applies to what you asked me as far as like, am I doing this right?
Yeah.
So same to you. You have a great head on your shoulder, you and Ron. And Jackie does too.
Thank you.
So one last fun question. I guess it's fun, but it's still therapeutic. What do you do for self-care?
Oh my gosh. You're going to laugh at me.
Okay. I probably will.
Yeah. I literally just love to just watch Jackie dance. So I'll go back through all the old videos.
I understand that because I go through my old videos and watch too.
Yeah.
Yeah. One time on the stage is not enough.
Exactly.
Yes. I am a self-proclaimed obsessed with my children.
Yeah.
Mom.
Of course. Yeah. Yeah. And I'll even watch rehearsal videos.
Okay. So to not put this pressure on Jackie.
Yeah.
Because what outside of Jackie will give you self-care?
Oh, heck, I go to the spa.
Okay. Okay, good. Okay.
Yeah, no, it doesn't all have to be about, you know, her and what she could do.
Because if she stops one day, you still have to have some self-care.
That's why I have videos, but yes.
That's true. Okay. Well, thank you so much, Maria Ramos. Thank you so much for
thank you for having me
and being it's vulnerable.
Yeah.
And I hope you could enjoy the rest of your day.
Same here. I'm a little jealous of you, but no, I'm excited. It's opening night.
Yes, it's show day. Yes. I can't wait to see Jackie tomorrow.
Yeah, it'll be exciting.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Before we go, Aurora Healing Crew, take a deep breath like you're soaking in sunlight. Warm, steady, grounding. As you move through your day, check in with your gut. Notice how you feel around others. Your energy is precious. Protect it so you have the strength and light to do what really matters to you. Because life is hard, and we're getting through it together. Thank you for listening to the Aurora Sessions Beyond the Couch. Visit our website at aurorasuncounseling.com to learn more. You can find us on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, LinkedIn, and YouTube. Just search Aurora Sun Counseling. Got questions or topics you'd love to hear us cover? Email us at info@aurorasuncounseling.com or drop a comment. We'd love to hear from you.